It's The Current's Music News, the daily podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. Today's Thursday, October 25th. I'm Jay Gabler.
This is Jade, and I'll be bringing you some hard data about who really loves to rock out to Halloween jams.
And we'll be talking about books. We have kind of a book-themed episode today, including a fascinating interview with a living legend of music. But first, a few of today's headlines. The Beastie Boys book comes out next Tuesday, and there will be an audiobook with a star-studded cast.
This is a book I've been looking forward to for a very, very long time. So I'm very excited to get into this. And the audiobook makes it sound even more fascinating.
Audiobooks are such a huge part of the book world now. If you're going to have a massive book, you're going to want to have a massive audiobook to go with it because so many people read books that way now. So this is a book written by Mike D and Ad Rock telling the Beastie Boys story. It's a huge book. It's 600 pages full of all sorts of cool stories. And it sounds like a lot of the people who are involved in those stories of the Beastie Boys history are going to be talking on the audiobook. Just a few names you're going to hear on this audiobook: Chuck D, Snoop Dogg, Kim Gordon, Jarvis Cocker, Bette Midler, Rev Run, LL Cool J, Jeff Tweedy. I could go on.
It's like the kitchen sink of artists. I love this.
All coming out next Tuesday. The winners of this year's Polaris Heritage Prizes have been announced.
So this is different than the regular Polaris Prize.
Right. So the Polaris Prize honors a great Canadian album every year, but the Polaris Prize has only been around since 2006. So people who run the prize thought it would be good to honor some amazing Canadian albums that came out before there was a Polaris Prize. So it's sort of like a, if there had been, who would have won in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s? So they do these heritage prizes every year. For each of the four decades leading up to 2006, the year the Polaris Prize was instituted. And for each of those decades, they have a jury choose an amazing Canadian album. And then they also let the public vote on their favorite Canadian album from that era. So this year's winners, the jury picked Critical Darlings, no surprise. The likes of Kid Koala, Dream Warriors, Bruce Coburn, Jean-Pierre Ferland. But the public, well, they went for the more popular artists. Neil Young's Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere, Rush with 2112, You Forgot It and People by Broken Social Scene. And yes, there is finally a Polaris Heritage Prize for Jagged Little Pill.
Yes!
Guitarist Marvin Reagan, a.k.a. Wawa Watson, has died of undisclosed causes at age 67. This is a great funk guitarist known as a member of the Funk Brothers. He joined Motown's house band in 1968 and got his nickname from the Wawa pedal that he used on some of that label's funkiest tracks.
Yeah, and he's somebody who's been active for years. I mean, yes, starting back at Motown, but working all the way through the 2000s. I mean, the last album that he was featured on was in 2015, Tyrese's album, Black Rose. And in the meantime, worked on the soundtrack for the film Shaft. He worked with Janet Jackson on her most recent comeback album. Just somebody that's constantly been working.
And a great example of how you think of the singer-songwriters behind your favorite hits, and certainly all the credit to them, but also there are so many musicians and artists who are a part of a classic single that you don't even necessarily think of, but then once you really focus in on their contribution, you're like, oh, I mean, without that wah-wah guitar played by Melvin Reagan, what would Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On sound like? What would Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive be without that guitar? And he played on The Temptations' classic track, Papa Was a Rolling Stone, a great example of his wah-wah style.
That day I'll always remember, yes I will. Papa was a rolling stone.
If you walk into a store in November, you know there are some really overeager places that just jump on the Christmas bandwagon pretty much automatically. I've talked to a bunch of people who immediately December 1 hits. That's all they want to listen to. I am more into the darker side of things, Jay. I enjoy celebrating my goth side with my Halloween music. And apparently, I am not alone. The New York Times compiled some of the hard data on who, in fact, listens to Halloween music. So they pulled these Spotify playlists that put Halloween in the title. And the states that end up listening to the most Halloween music are, and this is surprising, I guess, Utah, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Arkansas.
If you ask me what states listen to the most Halloween music, I probably would have got through 45 states, if I could even think of 45 states, before getting to Utah.
Utah. I know of all the places, Utah. But apparently, they enjoy getting a little dark. And if you are listening to Halloween music, this is basically how it breaks down. You're more likely to be white. You're more likely to be a woman between the ages of 30 and 49. So I'm like exactly the demographic for people who would listen to more Halloween music.
I wonder if some of that is like the parent effect too, right? Like you're maybe putting on fun Halloween playlists. If that's the age, you're going to have young kids at home. It made me think of that study that came out a couple of years ago arguing that people had a spike in interest in new music right around age 40. And I thought, well, is that actually people turning 40 and having a midlife crisis and wanting to discover new music? Or is it them having kids who take over their Spotify accounts and like listen to the top 40?
I like it. You could go either way. I'm thinking there's probably a little something to what you're talking about, Jay. But we touched on it a couple of days ago on this podcast, talking about what you're most likely to put on that playlist. Coming in at number one, Michael Jackson's Thriller. That's kind of the gimme. Number two, people still like the old classic, Bobby Boris Pickett in Monster Mash. And coming in at number three, I always enjoy this one, a little Ray Parker Jr. in Ghostbusters.
So I promised we'd talk about a dishy interview by a music legend. Tina Turner has given an amazing interview about books.
I would listen to her talk about anything, hair products, I don't care.
So the New York Times has this series called Buy the Books, and they talk to Tina Turner about books, and this interview is full of so much great detail about Tina Turner's life today. She's 78, mostly retired, shows up in public every once in a while, but does a lot of reading. Why wouldn't you? Live your life, Tina Turner. Anyway, so many great tidbits. I'll just share a few of them. She loves reading about spirituality, anything by the Dalai Lama or Deepak Chopra. She's there. She says the book that made her laugh the hardest was a book about sex when she had to sit her young sons down back in the day and she was going to like have the talk with them. And so she brought this book and she said none of them could keep a straight face. They're all just cracking up. She revealed that she likes to read about Jackie Kennedy, who she calls her role model. She is waiting for Mick Jagger's autobiography. She says Mick is a great storyteller. He can outtalk anyone on the planet. She's like, get to the keyboard, Mick.
Oh, my goodness. And I can just imagine, you know, somebody who is so involved with all of these artists, I'm sure she's like, and Mick, don't leave out some like glowing talk about Tina Turner and that. Come on.
Yeah, they used to hang out. She talked about once in an airport picking up a coffee table book on Egypt and looking at a picture of a female pharaoh and just feeling this connection that a psychic later confirmed, she says. So she feels she might be a reincarnated pharaoh. And I did not know this. The opening track to Private Dancer, I Might Have Been Queen, was actually written by a few songwriters who were inspired by her feelings about her Egyptian past. But my favorite detail from this whole interview, they asked her, okay, Tina Turner, you're having a literary dinner party. Who do you invite?
Yes, Jay, break it down. Who's there?
Three people. Stephen King, Anne Rice, and Dante.
It's going to get dark. That's a very Halloween setup.
She says, after all my years of studying the Divine Comedy, I need to ask Dante a lot of questions. And she says, I'm going to serve Thai food because I like things spicy. So for today's viral clip, we're spotlighting a new music video for the Hot 8 Brass Band cover of Joy Division's classic, Love Will Tear Us Apart.
And let me tell you, this is the most fun version of this song you will ever hear. I mean, the classic has Ian Curtis in his monotone delivery, and a bunch of other people have covered this. Calexico, Jose Gonzalez, even Soul Asylum, and they made it a little bit more rocking. But this is the first time I was like, yeah, I could dance to this. Just have a joyful day.
It's kind of like the soundtrack to getting into a relationship you know is going to end badly, but you're like, I'm going to love this and enjoy it while it's happening. Yeah, love will tear us apart. Bring it. So yeah, there's a really fun video going all over the Crescent City. It's sexy, it's fun, and it demonstrates what you can do if your sheet music gets crumpled. Maybe you've been out playing in the rain, you're rocking your way down Bourbon Street, you get a little wet. Apparently you can bring your music home, pull out the ironing board, and iron it out. And that's today's music news. You can see that video and read more about all those stories over at thecurrent.org. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade.
Our producer is Luke Taylor. If you're enjoying the podcast, please rate and review it, share it wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow with more music news headlines and a roundup of this week's new releases. We're also going to talk about our feelings about the new Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody.